their superficial, class-ridden lives, unaware that their ship is sinking. They deny that it ever could sink because they believe so firmly in the wondrous technology they have wrought. Next arises another image, President Bill Clinton at a podium in the Rose Garden speaking of a campaign to teach high school students how to settle differences nonviolently. Then he goes inside to check the score of the latest U.S. bombing in Yugoslavia. Denial again. Apparently, he is unconscious of the connection, and so is the press. The second film is George Lucas's The Phantom Menace. I'll see it soon, but meantime, I know Star Wars themes deal with battles waged between good and evil and demonstrating the Force, a power bigger and more comprehensive than any of us. The Force is best channeled through wise people and those spiritual apprentices engaged in tests and trials of personal transformation. The Force always works towards good, and eventually, a pure heart and love redeems evil. Indeed, evil is no more than a phantom menace. Love is real, and July, August, Leo energy knows this. Think about the illuminating power of bringing a lit flashlight into a dark room versus the lack of power of bringing an unlit flashlight into a light room. With the fixed cross of crucifixion in the sky formed by planets in the fixed signs of Leo, Taurus, Aquarius, and Scorpio, we set about our great testing and transforming. Star Wars is a good term for the mammoth struggle which the cross represents. Can we realize in our hearts that evil is only a phantom menace and then bring love and light to bear on that appearance?
Now, tonight we're going to deal with the Oracle of Transcendence, and it's the last one, it's the 12th one. And I asked Barbara to read that because today I got some insights into a relationship between that cross and this work. And I think it's real important to share that, and it all has to do with transcendence. Okay. So I've been, those of you that know me well know that I'm not usually very impressed with astrological events. You know, it's like, okay. But this one has really fascinated me, and I don't claim to understand it. But we've all been hearing more and more about it, and this statement that these are the two most dynamic eclipses since the birth of Jesus is a pretty powerful statement. finally, the intrigue of it sort of fascinated me to where I called Belinda a couple days ago, and we were talking, and she said, you know, why don't you call me back on Thursday and we'll look at this a little closer, because she said, I want to take a look at your chart a little better. And last night on the way to our Wednesday night class, Barbara was kind of going through all the classes and when they would end and which class went where and everything, because we're always on the way to the class, we're trying to guess which class it is, you know, because we're doing this one, then we're doing this one, and they don't follow any kind of a sequence. So usually I'm pretty aware of which one it is, but every once in a while I get surprised. And come to find out, in January, right at the beginning of January, we were invited to present this, and we started doing it, and then there was one, and then there was two, and then there was three, and then there was four, which, as you know, in this area is almost unheard of. I mean, I've tried to get one group going in this area numerous times, and it's been no go. Well, our last class, the last class of the last class, in other words, the last class of the last group is on August 10th.
the day right. before the Grand Cross Monument.
Right. So that really kind of impacted me. So when I called Belinda this morning and she was going through and I said, what is the relationship with that cross? You know, why do I feel it so strongly? And she said, you have that exact cross in your chart. I have that Grand Cross with the same opposed elements in my chart. It's just 4 degrees turned, which is not very much.
It's in the orb.
Yeah. Yeah. It's turned 4 degrees, but it's so it is pretty, I don't know how with the progression and everything, I don't know how on it is, but it's pretty close to right on that. And we talked about it, and she was sharing how the whole experience of that cross was what the work that we're doing is coming out of. And then I got this understanding, which is what this cross is about. You've heard me describe how this work started from a place of I couldn't do anything else. It was a place of having a lifetime of feeling stuck. You know, I would have this ability, and then when I would try to use it out here, it wouldn't work. And there was no reason it shouldn't work. I was more talented than this other person whose life was working just fine. And better looking, too.
And no ego whatsoever.
The ego was right in place, right?
And it's because of that Grand Cross. It really is an experience of crucifixion. And for me, it was this experience of Spirit saying, we're not going to let you play on that ego battlefield. And what I see is that as we come into this Grand Cross, all that stuff that has not served the spiritual evolution, just like all the stuff that wasn't serving my spiritual evolution, gets frozen. Right? And I believe that this work, literally, we've always said and felt that it was waiting for a particular point in time. And I believe it was waiting for this point in time when people would feel frozen in time and need a way of transmuting those energies, because I literally created this process to heal myself in that experience of being stuck in that cross, in that Grand Cross. And as you know, the cross, every single oracle that we work with is a cross. And the four words also form that cross, only uniquely. And so if we just look at the first one, what we have is, I am receiving, I am giving, I'm wanting, and I'm letting go. Now, if you take those energies as forces, put yourself in the middle of I'm receiving, I'm giving, I'm wanting, and letting go, you're going to have an experience of being crucified.
Crucified or
frozen.
Or.
Right.
I mean,
stuck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so the whole lesson of that cross is obviously not to be stuck. It is a way of using those energies to transcend that experience, because they're polarities, and that's what we have in this Grand Cross that's coming up. So my sense is that these groups, that what we're doing here is literally creating something that's going to facilitate us in being able to go through that window.
So that little, the middle of the cross is like a gateway for decrystallization and transcendence.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Remember, we talked about that the first time we talked about doing this class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's perfect because of, and I read you that article that Belinda had written.
Right. And I just
didn't realize how
I didn't realize how intimate it was.
Yeah.
it was, you know, it was not, I just didn't realize it was that intimate.
And we didn't realize it the night she came and spoke either.
No. Mm-hmm. Uh-uh. No. And I didn't realize it until this morning. And she said, you have that exact same cross, 4 degrees.
You have it in your progress chart? You have it in your natal chart?
Oh, my natal chart.
When you were born, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's 4 degrees off of what this one is.
Oh, but that's still, I mean, the orb is 8 degrees, so...
Bodhi,
yeah.
Do you have it in your hand?
What?
In the cross.
What do you mean?
Do you have a cross?
Oh, I don't know.
I'll get a light after.
Yeah.
Remind me to forget about that.
I don't know. I never looked for it. I mean, I have a cross. I do have a cross in my hand, but... Anyway, my feeling is that she also said that she acknowledged that in 1989, which is when we went to Mexico, I entered into this dark night of the soul. Hallelujah. It ended this January. Or at least I started coming out of that this January. And it just keeps going and going. But the point is that that's the perfect timing for this energy to flow right into that spot in a way that it can birth into a new experience. And of course it waited, because you know how abstract this experience is, and once people are actually experiencing that cross, it's going to be a lot less abstract. So I really believe that we're preparing to move through that cross in a real special way. And it ties in with the theme of this particular oracle, which is transcendence. It's the highest of the 12 oracles. It covers, it is like the higher self of the crown in the spiritual heart. And the symbol is the Merkaba, the activated Merkaba. And so let me just talk about that just a minute. The Merkaba, and we started out describing this process as angels or oracles of the Merkaba. So it's appropriate that it end there. And how that works in a very simple way is we all have this energy field around us. And it's generally spherical. But as we begin to embrace our spiritual path, tension is created, because we have embraced something that engages contradictory forces. And those contradictory forces basically are, you can't live in a survival mechanism, which we're extremely well programmed for through our what we call the ego and the id are entirely for that purpose. You cannot live as a survivor and as a creator. Because a survivor is adapting and controlling the conditions of the life. The creator is manifesting the conditions of the life. The survivor, who is also unconsciously a creator, perpetuates the reality that they come into. And we know statistically that that's a very, very true thing. That if you take the statistics of a million people, almost all of them will live within a certain strata of conditions throughout the entire length of their life. It's only a very small few, based on some dynamic experience, blast their way out of that. So when we begin, then we who have lived for a long time as survivors say, that's it, I'm not doing that anymore. I am going to become a creator. I'm going to become one with the creator and create. Tension is created, because there's two very different agendas going on there. You know, how do you live as a loving person in this world and in this society where love is like, you know, smooching over a candlelit dinner and it stops right there. Well, it goes on to the bed, but that's, yeah, if you're lucky. Yeah. But it's pretty much confined to that just extremely limited thing. So how do you do that? Well, we all experience conflict. And we also experience, when we start our spiritual life, is, okay, here's my spiritual life, and I go do this class, and I go to this meeting, and I go to this workshop, and I go do this thing. But that's there, and then I go back to my other life. And they're very separate. And this tension is created. Well, as that tension between those two realities begins to merge into one, that sphere begins to create this sort of flying saucer-shaped thing. And it's the embrace of the two that creates that shape. Now, that shape is the shape of the energy field around all things. It's the Creator's imprint. It's in everything. Absolutely everything. This is an important key. This is a very important key. As we become one with the source of that imprint, who is the Creator, our consciousness takes that shape. And we then are resonating to that universal imprint, and we begin to have the ability to move interdimensionally, and i.e. we are able to move through the fabric of the hologram. It's exactly the same shape everywhere. And as I attune to that shape in myself, I can go anywhere. That is transcendence in a very, very sort of graphic way, is the attunement to, not to the shape, because you can look at the shape and the shape will actually help you feel it. You can actually feel it by visualizing the shape. But ultimately what manifests that shape is the experience of love, because it's only through unconditional love that these two entirely opposed agendas can embrace and create that form within us. Barb?
I told you about my experience today that I had been praying for months about bringing the two together. And when I had the experience of those angels coming to me and saying, okay, now you've got to make a decision, and you've got this window, and you've got so many hours to make a decision. And I could never, it was so amazing. Because once I made the decision and I moved through this, it was pictured to me as a gate, this other place I went to. It was like, I think I said to you, my boat turned right side up.
Yeah.
And from that point on, it wasn't that there weren't challenges, that there aren't challenges. But there's always that energy.
And see, and therein is the relativeness, the relationship to this cross, because the cross literally freezes your other agendas. It's gonna freeze your worldly agendas. And if you're attached to those worldly agendas, then you're gonna have an experience of being crucified, because you're going to be stuck, and what you want is not going to be happening, and you'll be banging your head against something that, based on what that looks like, is really immovable. And based on what my experience is, not only is it immovable, but Spirit will allow you to think that it is happening right up until the most ridiculous last moment before it just jerks it right out of your mouth, right when you're about ready to bite down on it, it'll go doop, and there'll be just nothing there. You go, what happened? And they'll say, well, we don't know how, but, and you're going to have this experience. Well, the experience that this process is about is taking that experience, identifying what you want in the world, and surrendering it into a higher agenda, and then lifting on the energy contained in that desire into spirit. The dynamics here of this particular one are freedom and transcendence, are freedom and love, or the cross. Okay. Now, all the polarities create opposites. Then you say freedom and love. Well, based on how we normally think of love and freedom, they're opposites. In this paradigm. Because in love, there is this automatic, unconscious commitment that takes place where you're giving yourself freedom.
And you place conditions on it.
Right. And freedom, in the way that we think about it, is the place of not having commitments. But in the higher relationship, love and freedom are the same thing. Because, you know, what is freedom for except for to have the highest experience? So there's that whole dynamic. It's love, freedom, transcendence, and the attunement, based on what comes out of the codex, is they are not. I know it sounds abstract, they all are. They are not in the sense where I look out here and say, they are not, we are one. You see? You are not separate entities. We are one.
I know that.
Yeah.
I mean, forget it.
Right. But see, the they are not also resonates in the ego, in the place where in our teens we move into I am, they are not. So there's and in adulthood as well, where there can be a real abusive, and has been a lot of abuse around, they are not. It actually also happens to be that final step of transcendence, where the illusion of separation dissolves. It's you know, there's a desire to demonstrate that, and really the meditation does demonstrate that, but you can't really describe it. Right? So there's the whole experience is of transcendence. As we work with the attunement of transcendence, it's an experience of watching the outer reality just dissolve. I am transcending, and it's just dissolving.
Literally into vibration.
Literally. Mm-hmm. Right. And then they are not. We are one. So it's, they are not, we are one. So the what we'll do in this meditation is we will work with the polarities of I am free, I am loving. And then we do I am free, I am loving, I am transcending, they are not. And in the they are not, be conscious that the they are not is we are one. But we leave the they are not there because it will transmute residual energy still in that other they are not inside of you. Because I invariably, when I say this one is they are not, I see people go, they are not. Ooh, I don't like that. Right? because energetically it resonates with that ego, which is in denial of the others, in denial of existence, rather than in total inclusiveness. It's just the opposite. The breath on the second time around on this one is that breath where we breathe in, I am free. Then in, I am loving, I am transcending, they are not. And the image there is just everything is dissolving. And see, love is the thing that sparks transcendence. I am free. Freedom is about the freedom to come fully present in who we are. I.e., I am loving. Following that is transcendence. Following that, the illusion dissolves. I am free. I am loving. I am transcending. They are not.
I know I'm very new at this. May I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay. Heavens no.
Well,
you have to be here 6 weeks before you can ask a question. Yes, Christine, please.
I'll never make it down for the 10th. I understand the logic behind they are not, but why did you choose the words they are not?
Well, they I didn't really choose them. Early on, even before we were aware of the information in the codex, we were shown to work with four attunements in relationship to Oracle of the Heart, which has been our primary teacher here. Okay, and so Oracle of the Heart identified all these states of consciousness, but there was four different relationships with them that related to the four seasons. Okay, so summer was I am, and that's where we were out there, active, exposed, present. Winter, I am not. We retreat, we hibernate, we go within. Okay, you see that a lot better in this part of the world than you do in New Orleans. Yeah, people just party all year round there. Right, right. So you can see it easier in the seasons, but if you're paying attention, you can see the seasons there too. Spring is they are, and fall is they are not.
But then it's falling apart.
Right, it's falling, and people are also retreating from the activities of summer into they're preparing for winter, they're moving into they're going back to school. Right, they're coming home from their vacations, and they're going within. They're not as available for those outer activities as they were in the summer.
Dormancy.
Right. So there are those four seasons, and the way that they relate it here is as the four faces of God. See, the core statement of God is I am who I am. But here's this face over here that says, I am this, okay? And I am not this. And they are this, and they are not this.
Is the God created by?
Well, they are this. They are a bird, and they are not a bird. Within creation. So the four faces are the faces of creation, the faces of God in creation. I am this, okay, and I'm not this. Okay. They are this, and they are not this.
Okay.
So ourselves as a God, okay, we have these experiences that we identify with. And so let's say happiness. I am happy, I am not happy, they are happy, and they are not happy. So those are the star tetrahedron with the Merkabah comes activates into the Merkaba, it has four different axes. And so these would be the four different axes of, and so the final one is they are not. It's we begin in winter for whatever reason. Yeah, it's in the codex that way, and we come in as a little child, and it's about they are not. I mean, I am not. That's winter.
I understand the winter, but I don't understand how its correlation necessarily to me or us.
Well, you come in as a baby, mm-hmm. and you have an experience mm-hmm. of the world around you, which is an adult world of I am not. I'm not able to walk. I'm not. But it's it becomes imprinted in the consciousness.
Okay, I'm not going to get into it too much, but it would seem to me to depend very much on the nature of those parents, those people that brought this baby in. Because,
absolutely.
You know, if they're in transcendence, then I am. I mean, all of this is.
Yeah.
That's true, but on the physical 3D level,
yeah.
you come in being a totally helpless infant. You can't feed yourself, you can't change your diapers, you can't do anything,
right.
and they can do it all.
Right.
So you have an experience of feeling like you can't do anything, even though your soul knows
right.
you're perfect
and
totally connected to God.
Mm-hmm.
There's that inner wisdom. But there's also this physical reality that makes you feel like you're not able to do and perform until you grow and mature and step into that place of being able to. And then you step forward into the I am of teenhood.
And
states of human consciousness.
In an enlightened family or an enlightened society, that vulnerability is celebrated and honored,
right.
okay, as something wonderful and beautiful,
mm-hmm.
because there's an understanding that it's that vulnerability that brings you back to spirit,
right?
So when you come back around, you go through the human experience,
mm-hmm.
which has got that relationship to it, but then you come back through the same ones to heal that. And they all have a relationship to transcendence.
Mm-hmm. So you're speaking from a Western cultural paradigm.
Yeah. Well, I think you'll find that pretty much around the world, there's not a whole lot of truly enlightened societies in our world right now.
I don't know.
It
looks that way. What we're doing.
I mean, I haven't seen a whole lot. You know, maybe the Hunzas have it better, but maybe not. So we have any questions about this? About the transcendence? Covered everything.
So, yeah, my question is, I've had many glimpses of it, just from pure grace, and I've sometimes maintained it for a short time, but it's the maintaining it.
Well, that's a really good question, and it's not really something that you can, as soon as you start thinking about maintaining it, it's slipping away.
Right? That's right.
The minute the thought comes in of
how can I
hold on to this,
right.
it goes away. And so here's a really good question, because it relates to exactly why we're doing what we're doing. We're going through these 12 crosses, not just because they produce really high meditations, which they do, but because it's also a way of training the subconscious mind to do that in the presence of polarity. And it's like a little child. And it's as that child is doing that, I am free, I'm loving, I'm transcending, they are not, without us having to think about it, because it knows that it feels good, and it knows that that's in alignment with its true purpose, which it is, that we begin to have, by being, as you think, In your heart you become. And the problem is we stumble into these high states of consciousness, but then we stumble right back out because we have not trained the heart to know how to live there. And see, that's the whole purpose of really doing these exercises, which are these meditations ongoing, is that you're training the subconscious, which is the heart, in how to live there. So when the energies come in that resonate from these different frequencies, that subconscious mind has an understanding of how to be in a relationship of neutrality, and beyond neutrality, of transmutation. Beyond neutrality into transmutation. Right. Because if it all comes back to the flame, which is where all the words involved here come from. And we are here transmuting souls. We consume food, water, air, and we transmute those into energy. Okay? There's a whole bunch of other energies that we encounter, such as anger and fear and all sorts of energies that we are also here to transmute. Okay? And these are an understanding of how we train the subconscious to be in a relationship of transmuting all experience. Whereas in the other paradigm that we're coming out of survival, that thing is a bad thing. And that thing is a good thing. We resist that. We survive by resisting that thing and by attaching to that thing. This is an entirely other paradigm, which says everything is energy.
Everything's God.
Everything is God, and everything is food for this God.
Mm-hmm. So you can eat. I've heard there's a Tibetan practice. I'm sure you know of it. The way you eat darkness. Mm-hmm. Terrified me at first, and now I'm beginning to understand. If you are pure light, then you can eat everything.
Yeah. Right. Well, see, and I've never heard of that, but it certainly doesn't surprise me, mm-hmm. because yes, that's exactly mm-hmm. that's exactly
what you're describing.
The goal here.
It's a I'll get it for you because it's incredibly compassionate experience. Imagine eating Milosevic. You know, I mean that's mm-hmm. a big one.
Yeah.
But it's truly. When you're clear. Anyway.
Yeah. There's a book by a teacher who I never met and only have had a casual introduction to, named Rudy. He came from some tradition. It's a fairly well-known lineage. And anyway, the title of his one book is Spiritual Cannibalism. Right. And basically what that's about is consuming your own experience. And whereas I've never read the book, it was given to me and said, you must have this book. The title has always been there, like Spiritual Cannibalism. There's some point where it's like, oh, that's what we're doing here. We are consuming our own experience. And see, that's how we consume the darkness. We consume our experience of it. And that's what this system is a system that goes through the essence of all the ways that we experience of our reality, and into a cross that includes those in something that is fixed and yet resonant. In other words, on the base cross is the easiest place to see it. Receiving, giving, wanting, and letting go. Well, all of those are contradictory to one another. Right. But then there is a flow. Receiving goes to giving, and then to wanting, because I want to be able to give more, because I want to be able to receive more. And the lesson is, as you let it go, more can come in. So there's a flow. Yeah, it merges and becomes one thing.
There's not even a flow, it just merges.
It becomes one thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole thing. On the next level, it's discerning, trusting, knowing, accepting. Mm-hmm. and they become one thing. And at the place where those dynamics become one thing, we become an energy that is able to consume what comes in there. In the four words that we work with, which are like a mantra, has to do with our own personal particular cross in the way that we specifically consume and transmute and create.
At this point in time, or just as an
imprint? At least in this life. Yeah, in this life. It's really fun. I'm so pleased to see that relationship between that I have that cross, because it explains so much to me about where we're going and, you know, why I've had this experience. But I do believe that this that we're working with here is specifically for this time, because it literally comes out of the same energy that has been described as a trigger for this next paradigm.
Can you start working on these oracles at any time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. this class here is actually the last class is next week. And then we'll look at what we want to do. But the last class in the sequence is next week. This is the last oracle, and the next one is Oracle of the Heart, which is the transcendent triad, and it's the last in this sequence. Now we have some other possibilities, and we'll talk about what we're going to do there. Everything is kind of in a state of flux in terms of what we're going to do.
Is next week the dice?
Yes.
Next week is the dice.
I'll be gone next week.
Oh,
I didn't like that part.
Oh,
you do it.
No, that was intense.